Good morning. Dean Garland here, and today I'm with John Broome, the CEO of the Australian Advertisers Association, the AANA. John, do you want to give a brief introduction to your organisation and your role in both the Australian and the international marketing and advertising community?
Yes, good morning. Good morning, Ian. Thanks very much for inviting me along today. The AANA, as much as we like to think marketing is a very, very modern profession, we've actually been around since 1928, over 90 years representing advertisers in Australia. We are a team of nine people, and we, unlike other advertiser industry associations overseas, we actually do have one very unique role in addition to the normal representation roles. And that is that we are also the custodian of the advertising content self-regulatory system here in Australia. So which is a big responsibility, as you can imagine. Obviously we do this on behalf of advertisers, but also the broader industry who all benefit from having a successful self-regulatory system. So within the team, I've got code writers who manage that. And we also are the sole member of Ad Standards, which is the complaints handling body, which is essentially a separate division of the AANA, and kept at arm's length, obviously, because we're not marking our own homework. Complaints are handled by members of the public. But beyond self-regulation, of course, we're involved with advocacy on behalf of advertisers and indeed the industry, working on big topics such as the ACCC inquiry at the moment. But also, we're very strong proponents of what we call professionalizing the marketing community. So we bring capability to our members, we have training programs, and also we are big in the best practice space, and we work with our industry partners at the MFA and the IAB and other associations to bring those best practices to members.
Thank you. The last 12 months have been challenging for advertisers globally with the pandemic. What do you think the biggest challenges confronting your membership and the stakeholders now and into the near future?
We're in a lucky position here in Australia, I think, compared to many markets globally. We weathered the 2020 COVID crisis very well. And I would say that my members now are very much have come out and away from crisis mode, and they're looking to try and work out what significant changes, what long-lasting changes are entrenched going forward. And of course, there isn't one blanket answer. All categories are very different. Some categories clearly still are struggling and very challenged, particularly as we know tourism and the education sector, two big export earners for the Australian economy. But other sectors such as FMCG, for example, have done extremely well out of COVID. So I think really it all comes back to the consumer. What entrenched changes in consumer behavior are there? I think a lot of emphasis on what is the prevailing consumer sentiment today, and how does my brand interact with that? And I think companies and brands are trying to work that out. Against that, of course, is the commercial realities. I think we've gone from where we were, multiple scenario modeling because we had to, because we just didn't know what the immediate future was going to present, into a more not necessarily predictable future, but one where we can certainly look towards the medium term and plan and execute with more confidence. I think one of the messages that I am hearing from members, and it may be particular to Australia, but I guess there will be other markets in a similar boat, is question around supply. Australia is part of the global economy. Supply is sourced, a lot of sectors do source supply for product overseas, and global supply chains of course have been massively disrupted. So there's a huge increase in cost, there's a huge increase in timelines for supply chains, And I think it's going to be very interesting for many locally based companies to decide, do we bring manufacturing back on shore? I'll give you a great example. The car industry right now is actually, I think, benefiting from most probably from putting up prices because supply is so constrained at the moment, and they can basically afford to do that. And we've seen the rebound effect on the on the secondhand car market, which has seen a massive increase in price there as well. So lots of different things going on, but I do think it, you know, for marketers, it all comes back to understanding consumer sentiment and where that is.
Well, given the changes in the last 12 months, do you think your members have shown a propensity to for a dramatic change in messaging and the channels used? Clearly, work from home has been a big behavioural change. Are they using different strategies or different approaches, different measures or means to reaching those consumers?
I would, you know, with the benefit of hindsight now, say that the trend that we already lived with pre-COVID around the role of e-commerce and digital taking up a bigger portion of the pie has just been accelerated, right? And I think it's been a good thing. I think, you know, marketers have learned an awful lot very quickly in the past 12 months. And they're now, you know, very comfortable with, you know, the risk profile and the change that brings. However, you know, at the end of the day, I think when we look back in 2 to 3 years time, the fundamentals will still be true. You know, we will still need a balance of long and short term, and we will need a a multi-channel strategy. You know, some of the the old famous expressions, you know, TV is dead. Well, that's just clearly is not true. You know, different forms of TV, you know, are thriving as we all know, and marketers need to adapt to that. And indeed, you know, we see the sell side adapting to that very, very well. So I think on the whole, again, it's been a good thing. You know, marketers have found new channels of distribution through e-commerce. They are, you know, integrating their strategies a lot more effectively as a result of the acceleration that we've seen. So I think at the end of the day, it's a positive picture, certainly here in Australia.
John, we've had a couple of conversations at a conference most recently, and then with I've had other conversations with advertisers. I think it's probably fair to say that TV, particularly the last quarter of last year, had quite the purple patch. Full advertising loads running into Christmas and the new year. They've continued on. While at the same time, we've seen some of the digital platforms under serious threat. The Australian government inquiry and enforcing payment by organisations for news content, as was recently agreed between the platforms and the major news companies in Australia, is just one example. Probably more importantly, the Australian Competitions Commission has recently released a white paper and sought opinions on the role of the digital advertising marketplace. Some of the recommendations, there's six in total, are really quite profound, and they include things like challenging whether platforms could use scanning of emails to derive insights into consumer behaviour that could then be used in advertising targeting. Does the AANA have an opinion on this, and what do you think about the government getting involved with what's been a free market up until now?
What advertisers share is, when it comes to all channels, is they need trust and confidence in the channel, particularly around the user experience. Because, you know, if consumers are worried, in the consumption of a particular channel, then it's not a great environment to advertise your brand. So I think specifically when it comes to privacy, which I think is where you're going with this, Ian. Then obviously, you know, the AANA is keenly aware that, for example, the Privacy Act is currently under review, and that whatever changes, you know, come out with that, whether it moves much more towards a GDPR type of execution, needs to be very closely integrated with the activity that the ACCC are looking at when it comes to, you know, the ad tech supply chain and the inquiry that's midstream at the moment. The two, you know, essentially need to move in parallel. So, for example, you know, clearly, when it comes to the ad tech inquiry, advertisers are particularly keen on transparency, verification, measurement, and basically, you know, following impressions from one end of the supply chain, from the buy side, all the way through to the publisher on the sell side. And clearly, you know, there are, you know, implications for privacy around that. So therefore, you know, the solutions that eventually come out around that need to be integrated between, you know, the ad tech inquiry on the one hand and the Privacy Act review on the other.
So some of those changes flow into the marketing mix. Yeah, do you think they'll have an effect on the sort of behaviours that we were talking about before? Yeah, the changes that may have come out of both advertising and marketing approaches given the pandemic?
I think so. I think, let's put it this way. I think if of the six proposals, for example, that the ACCC put on the table, the AANA in our response, in our submission, are supporting five of them. Okay. So there's a great deal of synergy. And I think the one which is really interesting is the idea of a transaction ID. Now, why is that interesting? Because a transaction ID clearly gives us the opportunity to link impressions from one side to the other. If we've got that transparency and confidence, then marketers are going to invest more in that channel and with those, you know, various suppliers. So I think that can only be a good thing at the end of the day. And let's not forget that capability already exists in other channels, right? So we're not actually demanding anything different or new here. We're just requesting consistency across all channels.
Well, that's interesting. I think what you really talk to is the holy grail of marketing. Yeah, the prospect of being able to measure all the way through everything from advertising through the point of purchase and the move on sales. I think at the same time, it's probably fair to say that both here in Australia and overseas, yeah, we're seeing some tension between the traditional measures of media, the Barbs and Oztams that measure TV and in Australia and the UK respectively, and players like Emma and UCOM doing, you know, the same for digital publishing. That there's been a bigger press, you know, towards more holistic measures, yeah, you know, the move towards measuring outcomes. What's the AAA's position on things like, yeah, this move to, do you see a role for syndicated versus proprietary studies? Do you see them continuing to coexist, yeah, with one serving silos and the other a more holistic measure that is probably more appealing to the marketers? How do you see it evolving?
Well, a great question. And look, you know, it does come down to the two fundamentals of effectiveness and efficiency, which drive a lot of, you know, marketing decision making. Let me start with efficiency. You know, clearly, the legacy of the way that we measure audiences today is, as you say, a series of individual silos. They're simply not, you know, linked up. And advertisers around the world are frustrated with this. They're clearly, in some instances, bidding against themselves in the programmatic supply chain. Right. Yes. They are, you know, we've seen the massive issues with frequency capping that's going on. We're wasting money, and that's not a good feeling. And we are now at a stage where not only is the desire to solve this very, very clear from advertisers, but the technology to be able to do it is now emerging. So the AANA have been very, very closely working with the WFA initiative, where they basically laid out a set of principles for cross-media audience measurement. Now, you might say, well, yeah, but that's just a set of fluffy principles. No, it isn't, because in order to get to those principles, there were some key global players, not just advertisers involved with that discussion, but also sell-side players, including, you know, the digital platforms and so forth. And what's clear is that the great value of having a set of principles which then help guide execution at a market level is that we don't reinvent the wheel 26 times or, you know, 50 times or whatever it is. If there's a guiding set of principles and way of doing things, then it allows each market to basically apply those so that the global players are satisfied that they're not going to have, you know, lots of different systems to work with, but still allows enough room for that market to optimize to their local conditions. And that's what we are very interested in. But we have to do it in a measured and careful way, because there's so much that could go wrong with this. And indeed, it has been attempted in the past. So that's why the AANA is very, very keen on working with ISBA in this instance and their Origin project, which, you know, is well beyond, you know, a piece of paper now. And I understand that later this year, they will be going into, you know, beta testing and next calendar year, you know, potentially into scale up. Now that's starting with all forms of video and digital advertising. So it doesn't yet include outdoor or radio or whatever, but there's no reason why in time it can't. So I think, you know, there's a great opportunity here for markets around the world, not just Australia, to look at the, you know, a couple of pilots. There's another one going on in the US as well, I understand, to actually, you know, see how that model, that proof of concept, let's put it that way, could have value and application here in Australia. So we are keeping very, very close to that. And at the appropriate stage, you know, we will engage with the broader industry here in Australia to actually share that and look at the implications and opportunities for our market. But it will go beyond just the technical solution. Right. It will go to governance. It will go to funding, and, you know, all those key things, structural things that need to happen in order to make a technical solution work.
Over the years, there's been a large number of attempts, you know, various cross-media measures, yeah, probably going back to the 1920s when someone was interested in knowing the effect of radio and outdoor advertising together, you know, as a speculation. But I think that, you know, in my experience, you're working both in Australia and internationally, any of these sorts of initiatives are typically floundered on one or both of two things, funding and vested interest. How's it different this time?
And we'd be naive to think that those issues simply don't exist. They do, and I totally empathise with it. I totally understand. You know, there's a lot of money at stake here. You know, at the end of the day, let's take Austown, the equivalent of Barb here in Australia. You know, there are media companies, media owners, whose share price is directly linked to ratings outcomes. You know, at the end of the day. So, you know, there's a huge amount at stake. But I think equally, as much as media owners need to protect their businesses, they need to think about how they're going to grow going forward. And of course, you know, innovation, competition, you know, play huge, you know, roles in that. And I think, you know, here, particularly here in, you know, in Australia, we've got very vibrant media channels. You know, each of them are, you know, are innovating in their own way and responding to that challenge. Outdoor is a classic example in terms of the digitization that's going on there. You know, programmatic buying of outdoor. You know, all this is, you know, is very real today. And I think, you know, it comes down to where there's a will, there's a way. And you know, the danger of not actually having a positive will in all this is that you could get left behind, you could get excluded, and you know, the train might have left town, and it then becomes doubly hard to, you know, if you're not on that train, to then say, whoa, hold on, what about me? You know, look at my value, you know, because if that if you're not connected, if you're not integrated within that, you know, advertiser-led, you know, initiative, that you're not meeting that advertiser need, then you're ignoring the market.
You've touched on the programmatic aspect of outdoor, and indeed over the last 10 years, yeah, there's been growth of a whole suite of programmatic marketplaces. Indeed, if you talk to some of the agency environments, yeah, there's been speculation that, that most of the main media might move to trading like the stock exchange. I think that's probably unlikely for a couple of reasons. There are still media with limited supply, broadcast, television. Yeah, there's only so many minutes of commercial inventory that they can sell each hour. Print is constrained by the physical aspect of it. While I guess in theory, digital is unlimited, it's really constrained by the attention economy and the 1440 minutes that we're given each day. It's funny though, in light of all of that, both the AANA and PwC in the UK recently reviewed the programmatic supply chain and found very similar weaknesses in both places. That it seems to me that as we've moved to this digital evolution, there's issues like you touched on advertisers bidding against themselves. How do we improve that? Is this something the AANA has to look at, and how does it achieve these outcomes of improving that process? Is it about better stewardship of the agencies? Is it about controlling the supply side, the media, and better management of that directly by the advertisers, or is it some combination of them both?
And it's one I've pondered and thought about a lot over the last 3 or 4 years, because I think that, when transparency first, reared its head, a few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, the default position was to blame everyone else, to blame the agencies, to blame the suppliers in the ad tech supply chain. But you know what? It actually starts with the marketer, right? It starts with us. And it starts with educating ourselves around, how does this really work? Where are the risks? What do I need to be aware of? How do I mitigate, the potential pitfalls? How do I skill up in those processes? And then translate that into a meaningful conversation with your suppliers, right? Be it the media agency, be it your trade desk, or even an in-house, platform. Because only when you actually have conversations around, I want these brand safety measures in place, or I want to be able to verify, or I want to be able to link data, across suppliers in the supply chain for these reasons, whatever they happen to be. Only when the marketer takes control of those conversations will the partners in the supply chain actually sit up and listen and start to do it. And I think one of the things that we found more kind of like a subjective finding, let's put it that way, in the recent AANA MMI test, which is just, I have to stress, it was a limited test involving three major brands, albeit over 120 million impressions, was that there was a lot of proxying going on. There was a lot of kind of like assumption that my agency is onto that, right? Without necessarily taking ownership and being accountable back in the marketing team for it. Now, I know what's going to happen now. My phone's going to start ringing and say, well, yeah, but John, we do, but this was quite clear. So what do we do about it? Well, it does come down to education and starting with a marketer. And I think the work that we've done recently with the IAB and the MFA, working together as an industry across that whole supply chain and saying, look, everyone here says education is absolutely key. How do we define what digital advertising best practices are so that marketers can pick those up and have that conversation with their agency partners? Because every marketer's situation is unique and different. There's no one blanket, approach. But, if verification or audit, for example, is important to you as a marketer, then put it into your media contracts, put it in there and find an agency that is willing to work with you on that basis. Because some will, others, maybe others don't, I don't know, but some certainly will.
It's interesting that you should mention the IAB and the MFA, which the MFA being the peak body for the media buyers in the Australian context, because you know, for people who don't know the AANA, you spend a lot of time building training courses for marketers, both their junior and mid-level. Is that because there's been a failure? You mentioned universities are a particular strength of the Australian economy, yet clearly there's some gap in the knowledge of those executives. Is it because the universities aren't training them? Or is it you're seeking skills that you really can't get until you get into a job, like the stewardship role that we were talking about before?
I think a lot of senior marketers have been feeling this for a long time. And when we were conducting, this was about 3 years ago now, when we were conducting a review of our own value proposition to our members, what came out loud and clear around that was frustration from CMOs around the declining level of capability, practical marketing capability, right? Not theory, not university stuff, but hands-on handling of tools, amongst their teams. And look, when I was in the chair at Kellogg's and Unilever, I noticed this too. But being a bit of an old grey hair in the industry, I benefited in my youth, my early days, from really structured marketing training programs that took that learning, that theoretical learning that I received in business courses at uni, into practical hands-on tools in the workplace. But certainly here in Australia, maybe, I don't know whether it's true overseas, but we've seen a massive culling of training budgets. It's an overhead. It's easy for a red pen to go through it. And as a result, I'll give you a classic symptom. I had one CMO say to me, "John, I am frustrated with the amount of time I have to rewrite communication briefs in order to get something that is worthy of challenging my agency partners with." So we sat back and we said, okay, what is the AANA's role in improving marketing capability? Because let's face it, there are a lot of suppliers, in the marketplace offering great training programs, some of them offering great, technical training programs. So therefore, how could we add value? It came back really to a specific need around establishing the core fundamentals of marketing amongst junior to middle marketers. Understanding what an insight is, a lot of talk about data, but an observation out of data is not an insight. So how do you get to an insight that's a springboard for growth? Really fundamental skill. Secondly, what is a brand proposition? How do you develop a brand proposition? How do you then translate that brand proposition, into brand storytelling and making it a compelling and, relevant idea that consumers, want to engage with? That is an art and it's a science. And it can be trained, it can be taught. And then lastly, how do you know it worked? Because increasingly what's happening now is that boardrooms, leadership rooms want to know that it's been a worthwhile investment. And it's no point, a marketer, whether a junior marketer or a senior marketer, going into a boardroom and saying, look at my awareness scores or look at my attribution rates or whatever. They actually have to translate it through into the P&L and the commercial realities and saying, the return on the dollar was X. That's what we set ourselves as a target. And as a result of that, they see marketing as an investment, not an expense. So that's essentially what we set up with something we call the Brand Masters Program, which has been up and running now for just over a year. And we are getting fantastic NPS scores out of it. And it's really boosted our own, I think, relevance, to our members and our value proposition to members too. Look, I think here in Australia, the vast majority of advertisers do not have the capacity necessarily to build in the amount of budget, let's put it that way, into their overhead budget to be able to satisfy this need. Some companies are much better than others. I see it right across our members, and it's not a blanket truth. But I think the proposition that we can give members is that because we don't essentially charge market rates for our training, it's all part of the membership fee. So there's a kind of like value proposition there that's unique to an association. It's a 2-for-1 deal essentially. And that has proven very, very attractive to current members and indeed some of the new members that we've been bringing on board recently. So there is a solution, you know, it's got to be a solution here. And, we play a role. We're not the entire solution, but we can play an important role. And I think the other thing as well is that advertisers or members have been very happy that it's a capability solution that's by marketers for marketers. There's no hidden agenda here. You know, it's not the supply side or the sell side bringing training, which is obviously potentially, you know, prone to bias. This is really impartial and objective. And then we can bring in that expertise, you know, to answer specific questions where it's relevant.
This almost brings us full circle. You're talking with these programs about how you're teaching executives to, reach consumers at the right time, the right place, a channel neutral approach to planning and to advertising. At the same time, we've seen a fairly significant growth in ad-free environments. Clearly, yeah, Netflix and the local streaming services are the big examples, but walled gardens, yeah, for newspapers and other publications, the access to, say, ad blockers, yeah, being more prevalent, the privacy settings, yeah, that Apple and iOS 14. Do you see the growth in these as being a challenge or something that just something that you have to work around?
I think, you know, the popularity, the adoption of ad-free, you know, CTV streaming is a proof point in itself. I guess the question remains, you know, to once that subscription model peaks, is the financial model behind it sufficient through subscription to, you know, meet shareholder needs? Potentially that could open up. There could be a two-tier system or whatever. So I think it's too early to say, you know, it's a crisis or anything like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to the quality of content. If channels that carry advertising meet, you know, user needs around content, then this won't be a problem. And I think, you know, that's where particularly video, ad load video, you know, clearly has a massive opportunity, whether it's a traditional broadcaster or whether it's, you know, YouTube or whatever. If the content is great, you know, consumers are going to migrate there. I don't have any doubt with the recognized transaction that consumers understand that, you know, in order to access content for free, then I'm prepared to sit through, you know, a certain amount of advertising. It's incumbent upon the advertiser to make sure that's equally engaging. That relationship, that deal has been around for decades, of course. And I don't see that being necessarily threatened.
Well, I think the good news is that there's challenges like this that are going to keep us all employed.
It's for us to solve, isn't it?
It is.
You know, and bad on us if we can't.
John, it's been wonderful talking to you. Yeah, thanks, and see you soon.
Pleasure, Ian. Thank you.
Thank you.